Only one, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Dan Novak and Dan Friedel. Later, Faith Perlow presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. History Series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
The members of K-pop band BTS will serve their required military service under South Korean law. The band's management company made the announcement Monday. There had been debate over whether the group members could be given an exemption from service because of their artistic success. Big Hit Music said the band's oldest member, Jin, will cancel his request to delay his service. The six other BTS members also plan to serve in the military. The group is looking forward to joining together again around 2025 following their service commitment, the company said in a statement. No additional information on the timing of their service was given. The band members performed together in Busan, Korea, over the weekend. That will be their last performance as a group until they finish serving in the military, Big Hit said. HYBE is the parent company of Big Hit. In a letter to shareholders, HYBE CEO Park Ji-won said there should not be financial concerns related to the BTS military service. He said the company had signed other successful artists like K-pop group NewJeans and Western performers Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande. We have always been aware of the eventuality of mandatory military service, and we have long been making preparations to be ready for this moment, Park wrote. He added that individual activities for several of the members are planned into the first half of 2023. The announcement came after South Korea's Commissioner of the Military Manpower Administration told lawmakers this month that it would be desirable for BTS members to serve in the military. He said it would guarantee fairness. After joining the military, Jin and other BTS members will receive 5 weeks of combat training before being assigned to units, military officials said. The officials said that the singers would go through the same process as other South Korean men. South Korea's military, for years, had assigned entertainers to jobs related to producing radio and television material for the military. But the entertainment soldier system was ended in 2013 because of concerns over fairness. Defense Minister Lee Jong-sup said in August that if BTS members joined the military, they would likely be permitted to continue practicing and to join with the group for tours around the world. The possibility of BTS members serving in the army had been a highly debated issue in South Korea. Jin turns 30 in December, the age at which men can no longer delay entering the military. Other members are currently between 25 and 29 years old. Under South Korean law, most able-bodied men are required to perform 18 to 21 months of military service. Special exemptions had been given for athletes and artists who perform well in certain international competitions. The band formed in 2013 and has fans around the world who call themselves the Army. After building a large following in Asia, BTS grew its popularity in the West with its 2020 song Dynamite, the band's first all-English song. That song was the first by a K-pop group to go number one on Billboard's Hot 100. South Korea's required military service interferes with young men in their professional careers or studies. Because of this, avoiding military service is a highly sensitive issue. Opinion studies in recent weeks showed that the public was divided over whether the BTS members should serve in the military. I'm Dan Novak.
The hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica last week reached its largest size since 2015. It is the third straight year the hole has reached more than 24.8 million square kilometers. That is a bit larger than the size of North America. But experts say that in general, the hole is getting smaller year by year. The overall trend is improvement. It's a little worse this year because it was a little colder this year, said NASA Goddard Space Flight Center Chief Earth Scientist Paul Newman. Cooler than normal temperatures, high in the atmosphere over the southern polar areas, increased clouds. And the clouds release chlorine and bromine chemicals, Newman said. These chemicals react with the ozone and break it apart. Some experts say the cooler air above Antarctica is the result of climate change. Even though heat-trapping carbon from coal, natural gas, and oil make Earth's surface warmer, the upper atmosphere gets cooler. But Newman said the ozone area above Antarctica might be too low to be cooled by climate change. Some scientists worry that climate change will start affecting efforts to reduce the ozone hole. The fact that the stratosphere is showing signs of cooling due to climate change is a concern, said Martin Chipperfield. He is an atmospheric scientist at Britain's University of Leeds. In 1987, the world agreed to an important treaty called the Montreal Protocol. The treaty banned ozone-destroying chemicals. It took many years to see the effects of the treaty. That is because some of the chemicals that destroy ozone, such as CFC-11, can stay in the atmosphere for decades. Chlorine levels are down almost 30% compared to their highest level 20 years ago, Newman said. University of Colorado's Brian Toon noted that large fires in Australia and the addition of huge amounts of water from January's undersea volcanic burst are new factors that may be affecting the ozone hole. I'm Dan Friedel.
Just like vegetable seeds, you can save flower seeds from your garden this year to plant next year. Jessica Damiano writes about gardening for the Associated Press. She shares some tips for saving your flower seeds for next year. If you want the same kind of flower or plant for next year's garden, collect only the seeds from plants labeled as heirloom or heritage. These kinds of plants will grow just like their parent plant. Hybrid seeds, with a mixture of two different parents, will produce new plants, but they will only look like one of the parents. Therefore, you are taking a risk with planting hybrid seeds. Even if you expect plants to be the same as their parents, there are no guarantees. Wind or insects could bring pollen from one plant to another and accidentally create a hybrid. You can avoid this by planting only the plant from which you plan to collect seeds. But if you like surprises, start experimenting. You could create a lovely new plant or flower. Just like everything else in gardening, timing is important. Collect seeds on a dry, sunny day. Let the seeds grow and dry on the plant, or else they might not develop later on. But do not wait too long. After harvesting the seeds, remove the non-seed material, like petals. Spread the seeds on something like an old newspaper, and let them dry for 1 week. You can place the seeds in folded paper or a glass container that can be sealed. Then store them in a cool, dry area. Make sure to mark your paper or container so you do not forget in the spring what they are. When stored with care, seeds are good for several years. But you should plant the harvested seeds the following year for best results. Also, be sure to leave some seeds outside to feed birds over the winter. They will help you in the spring by providing insect control in your garden. Keep an eye on flowers like California poppies and Texas bluebonnets. When their pods open, these plants could spray their seeds up to 6 meters away. Once on the ground, it is difficult to collect them. Instead, tie a small bag for seed collection over the pod when it nearly opens. If the explosion happens when you are not looking, the bag will collect the seeds for you. For plants with prickly seed heads, like Mexican sunflowers, cut the head off the plant and drop it into a paper bag. Give the bag a shake to help loosen and separate the seeds. This will save your fingers. Some flower seeds, like sunflowers and daisies, do not develop well. In this case, try to pick the fattest seeds for planting, or even add more seeds to the soil to make sure that some will grow. Other kinds of flowers, like marigolds, produce seeds that have a rod-like structure in them. The petals are tight, so remove the dry petals and open the seed head to release the rods. After that, you can dry, store, and plant the entire structure, not just the seeds. I'm Faith Perlow.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, our weekly program of American history for people learning English. I'm Steve Ember. We've been discussing the presidency of Thomas Jefferson. He was America's third president, elected in 1800. In our last program, we talked about the dispute between Jefferson and the Chief Justice of the United States. Jefferson believed the Constitution gave Congress the right to decide the country's laws. But Chief Justice John Marshall believed the Supreme Court had the final say. The two men's beliefs were tested in a case called Marbury versus Madison. John Marshall's arguments won. He wrote a decision saying the Supreme Court had the power to rule on the laws that Congress passed. The Supreme Court did not act on that power during Jefferson's administration. But John Marshall's decision did help establish the role of the Supreme Court in the American government. The Marbury versus Madison case is one of the important legacies of Jefferson's presidency. But historian Joseph Ellis says it was not the only one.
The major achievement of Jefferson's presidency is the Louisiana Purchase, which is a lot of luck, as well as his willingness to take advantage of the luck.
The story of the Louisiana Purchase begins with France and Spain. The two European countries wanted to limit the power of the United States. So in 1800, Spain and France entered into a secret treaty. In the treaty, Spain gave France control of a large area in North America called the Louisiana Territory. The Louisiana Territory stretched north to south from the Gulf of Mexico to Canada, and it stretched east to west from the Mississippi River to the Rocky Mountains. The area was important not only for its large size, it also included some valuable navigation features, including where the Mississippi River opened into the Gulf of Mexico. Napoleon Bonaparte ruled France at that time. Jefferson did not want Napoleon in North America. He felt the French presence was a threat to the peace of the United States. He decided to try to buy parts of the Louisiana Territory, especially around the mouth of the Mississippi River near the city of New Orleans. Jefferson sent James Monroe to Paris as a special negotiator. But Monroe never had a chance to offer the American position. Napoleon had decided to sell everything to the Americans. He told his finance minister to give up Louisiana, all of it. Napoleon needed money for a war with Britain. James Monroe was happy to negotiate the purchase of Louisiana. They agreed on a price of 80 million francs for all the land drained by the Great Mississippi River and all its many streams. The Louisiana Purchase nearly doubled the size of the United States at that time. It included the present-day states of Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, Iowa, and Nebraska. It stretched into parts of Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, and Louisiana. The Louisiana Purchase also opened the Mississippi River to American commerce and travel. Historian Andrew O'Shaughnessy says that as a result of this access, the Louisiana Purchase fueled the country's economic expansion in the 19th century. And Mr. O'Shaughnessy says the Louisiana Purchase created more opportunities for Americans to own land.
It was very important to Jefferson because he really wanted every free member of society to be able to own land. He regarded land ownership as in many ways essential to someone's independence and their ability therefore to participate in a republican government.
But both Mr. O'Shaughnessy and historian Joseph Ellis say the Louisiana Purchase went against Jefferson's beliefs about central government. Joseph Ellis says that in many ways, Jefferson's presidency aimed to make the federal government almost invisible and to limit the president's power.
And the Louisiana Purchase is the most authoritative executive action in American presidential history. One president decides to buy the Midwest, and he does it unilaterally.
Historians say the Louisiana Purchase is one example of Jefferson's contradictory character, in which he says one thing but does another. Andrew O'Shaughnessy adds that Jefferson made trade-offs. When he bought Louisiana, Jefferson used presidential power in a way that was not specifically permitted by the Constitution. But Mr. O'Shaughnessy says Jefferson was also looking to the higher good. In the case of the Louisiana Purchase, the good of improving the country's political health. Federalists in the early 1800s also questioned Jefferson's decision to buy Louisiana. They feared it would weaken the power of the states of the Northeast. Federalist leaders made a plan to form a new government of those states. But to succeed, they needed the state of New York. Their plan for a new government led to another memorable episode in American history. Aaron Burr was vice president during Thomas Jefferson's first term. Burr became a candidate for New York governor. The Federalists believed Burr would win the election, become governor, and support their plan. But Federalist leader Alexander Hamilton did not trust Burr. The two had been enemies for a long time. Hamilton made some strong statements against Burr during the election campaign in New York. The comments later appeared in several newspapers. Burr lost the New York election. The Federalist plan for a new government of northeastern states died. New York historian Valerie Paley says Burr heard about Hamilton's strong comments. He was offended.
He called him something like despicable. It hinged on a word, one word, and a word as simple as despicable.
Burr asked Hamilton to admit or deny the comments. Hamilton refused. The two men exchanged more notes. Burr was not satisfied with Hamilton's answers. He believed Hamilton had attacked his honor. Burr demanded a duel. A duel is a fight, usually with guns. Valerie Paley says, in those days, gentlemen often used duels to settle rivalries and defend their honor.
So it wasn't so much these men dueled to kill. They would purposely miss their shots, and then everything, the air would be cleared.
Hamilton opposed duels, yet he agreed to fight Burr on July 11, 1804. The two men met at Weehawken, New Jersey, just across the Hudson River from New York City. The duel would take place by the water's edge at the bottom of a high rock wall. The guns were loaded. Burr and Hamilton took their places. One of Hamilton's friends explained the rules. "Are you ready, gentlemen?" he asked. Both answered yes. There was a moment of silence. He gave the signal. Burr and Hamilton raised their guns. Two shots split the air. Hamilton raised up on his toes, then fell to the ground. Burr remained standing. He looked at Hamilton with regret, then left. Hamilton died the next day. he was not yet 50. Valerie Paley says Hamilton's story is almost like a television or newspaper drama.
He was extremely attractive, and he had such a romantic story. Here he is, the immigrant boy from the West Indies, made good, comes to New York, goes to King's College, becomes a sort of self-taught lawyer, becomes aide-de-camp to Washington, all sorts of extraordinary things, marries so well, and also has this vision of what modern America might become, and in many ways was able to implement at least an early bit of that vision before his death.
Hamilton had made a big impact on the United States. He had created a national bank and influenced many government policies. Newspapers throughout the nation reported his death. Most people accepted the news calmly. To them, it was simply the sad end to an old private dispute. In the months after Hamilton's death, the nation prepared for the next presidential election. Once again, the Republican Party chose Thomas Jefferson as its candidate for president. But the Republicans refused to support Aaron Burr for vice president again. Instead, they chose George Clinton. Clinton had served as governor of New York 7 times. The Federalist Party chose Charles Cotesworth Pinckney of South Carolina as its candidate for president. It chose Rufus King of New York to be its vice presidential candidate. The campaign was quiet. In those days, candidates did not make many speeches. Republican pamphlets told of the progress made during the past 4 years. The former Federalist administration raised taxes, they said. Jefferson ended many of the taxes. The Federalists borrowed millions of dollars. Jefferson borrowed none. And Jefferson got the Louisiana Territory without going to war. The Federalists could not dispute these facts. They expected that Jefferson would be reelected, but they were sure their candidate would get as many as 40 electoral votes. The results shocked the Federalists. Jefferson received 162 electoral votes. Pinckney received just 14. One man tried to explain the meaning of Jefferson's great victory. He was John Quincy Adams, son of former President John Adams. President Adams had been a firm Federalist. This is what his son said. "The power of Jefferson's administration rests on a strong majority of the American people. The president has great popular support. His re-election shows that the experiment of the Federalists has failed. It never can and never will be brought to life again. To try to bring it back would be foolish. It would be like trying to put life into a body that has been buried for years." After the election of 1804, only 7 Federalists remained in the United States Senate. Only 25 remained in the House of Representatives. Thomas Jefferson would be president for another 4 years.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.